Hello, and welcome to Book City Roanoke. I'm Douglas Jackson, and today I have Chris Spezak with me. She is the author most recently of the Novel Editing Workbook, and we're going to spend some time talking with her about that and about editing and about her love for words. But first, let me tell you that Book City Roanoke is an exploration of our things literary. And our sponsor is Book No Further, down on Roanoke's historic city market. And with that, we're going to dive right into it. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Douglas. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being here. Now, we were planning on doing this in person, and we've had some changes, but you've got some ties to Roanoke.
I do. I grew up in Roanoke. I like to say I was born and raised there, though I'll fully admit the first 10 months of my life, which I do not remember, I did not live in Roanoke. However, at about 10 months of age, I moved to Roanoke and I lived there through my graduation of high school. So Roanoke is a special place in my heart, and I like to return often because it's just such a wonderful city full of great people and great mountains and such a great outdoorsy and literary scene. I love it.
Yeah, wow, we love hearing that. And but now you're in Richmond, right?
Right.
And what do you do in Richmond?
Well, I came to Richmond a while back for graduate school, actually, and I figured I was going to be here for 2 years and then move on with my life, and that was over a decade ago. And I am now an editor and author here in Richmond. I am the chair of the board of directors of James River Writers, which is a great literary nonprofit in this city. And again, I found another city with an amazing literary scene, and that gets me every single time.
Yeah, there's so much happening in Richmond. It's just a robust arts and cultural scene. And yeah, James River Writers do terrific work. And they've been around for a while now. How many years?
Right. They were founded in 2003. And we're gearing up for, I believe it's our 17th annual conference this October.
How many people do you get to that conference?
It's about 400 people strong, and our membership in Central Virginia is about 500 members, which it's such a great literary community, really, from poets, fiction writers, playwrights, the whole gamut.
A couple of years back, I attended a workshop you did here in the Roanoke Valley Writers Conference. It was terrific. And is that a big part of what you do?
It is. I do a lot of editing and I focus specifically on fiction. But one of my favorite things to do is to travel to writing conferences and do those types of workshops. I used to be a teacher. I used to teach college writing courses, freshmen and sophomores in college. And I love that classroom environment and that connection that you can have one-on-one or in that group setting. So traveling to conferences is one of my favorite things to do because I'm just so inspired by all the stories I get to hear by the people around me. I feel like I have the best job in the world, that I'm just reading great things, creative imaginations all day, and then I travel and meet more creatives. It's great.
Oh, and you're creating this yourself. There is no template for a career like yours. How have you started to piece it together?
You're absolutely right that there's not a path that I've directly followed. I went to graduate school and got perhaps the least marketable degree of all time. I have a Master of Liberal Arts, which means I am a master in lots of things. But I like to say I'm an expert in lots of things too, but you know. But that master's degree enabled me to teach college level English courses. So I taught college for about 6 years. And while I was doing that, people kept coming up to me on the side asking me to help with a novel edit or some e-commerce descriptions for Amazon or to ghostwrite a CEO's blog or something like this, because they realized I just had a passion for how you can communicate and connect with your audience, no matter what that audience is, with your words and through storytelling. So through about those 6 years of teaching college, I just kept getting asked so much on the side to do projects, and I realized, wait a second, I can actually step away from the classroom and have my own writing and editing business on my own schedule. And it was a blast to kind of step away and realize I could do this on my own. And this is actually just past 10 years in business as an independent writer and editor.
Fantastic. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So how do you describe your mission for the work that you're doing?
Well, I just feel like in this moment in history, every single one of us is a writer. We all write emails and resumes, but we also have so many stories to tell. And with all of the technology tools of today, like you and I are putting together this whole new scene right now with this podcast where we should be sitting next to each other, but we're not. There are so many tools for anybody to tell a story, for anyone to publish, whether that is the traditional New York literary route or whether it's an indie route. And because anyone can tell a story and everyone has a voice and stories to share, it's just so great to enable people to find their power and to enable their stories and their communications to be stronger than they ever imagined, and for those dreams to come true and then find their readers.
Wow. That's an important mission. And I know the answer to this is kind of endless, but overall, why do people write? Why are they trying to communicate at the heart of it?
That's such a good question, and you're right. That is absolutely an endless question. So many of us have that spark inside of us where we have ideas. Sometimes it is an idea that's a manifesto that we want to change the world the way it is right now because we know it can be a better place. Sometimes it is a spark of a story from our childhood or our family's lives. Sometimes it is a spark of imagination that is an escape or a way to tell a metaphor for this whole other concept. There are so many reasons that we tell a story, both real and imagined. But my goal is to find a way to take that idea to a reality.
Who first helped you take an idea to reality?
So for me, I think I've been a writer my entire life, whether I really ever realized it or not. I've always loved so many different things, and math and science were honestly some of my favorite things. And I think that has translated into my love of the nitpicky side of grammar and the subtleties of the English language. All that little nitpicky stuff, I think, comes from that side of my brain. But I've been writing for forever, in kindergarten, writing my first books. In fourth grade, I remember I wrote my first chapter book, and I was so proud of it. I think I didn't realize that it was something worth pursuing seriously until I was a senior in high school, where I was loving biology and thinking I was going to college to be pre-med and thinking about all of these really fun math classes I was taking. And I had a creative writing teacher who gave me the writing award at my high school. Shout out to North Cross School. And she gave me this creative writing award when I graduated. And it was the first time that I thought, oh, apparently I'm good at that thing that I really like to do. And it was really the first eye-opening moment of saying, maybe there's something I should not stop doing. And it was a good moment.
That says a lot. I think often about young people and what they start to excel at or what they see themselves excelling at, and just the power of an adult or someone in their life saying, hey, you're really good at this. And it seems like just that is enough to, you know, whether no matter how good they are at it or what comes to them naturally, it's enough to make them want to work for it and become even better.
Absolutely. And that's where I feel like with my job, I have this gift of working with so many writers and seeing all of these amazing stories. And so often what's there is solid. It's really, really strong. However, if you just push a couple degrees further with it, it can become unstoppable. It can gather all of these audiences. And that's where I love having that connection, that partnership, really, with writers to show them you're amazing. And if you just push it a couple degrees further, it's going to just take on the world.
Push that couple of degrees further. And we're going to get in a little bit into the workbook as well. But before we, it's kind of a bridge to that. Let's start to talk a little bit about that editing process. And at one point in the workbook, you mentioned it as transformative. And I think you're talking about a specific part of the editing process. But how do you see editing as transformative?
So often when people think about editing, they're thinking about typos. They're thinking about punctuation mistakes or word usage, something that just isn't quite right. But editing is so much more complex than just that final proofreading step. Sometimes it's that look of the entire structure of your story. What is the beginning? is that the best beginning? Just because it's the first place you started writing, does that necessarily mean that that's where the story truly should begin? Same thing with the ending. Just because that's where you finally hit that final the end period, is that the best ending? Is your protagonist someone people who truly connect with? Is your choice with pacing or point of view, are all of these decisions correct? Just because you did it first, is it worth still some time to re-examine it? And this is the moment where if you actually step outside of your story and the success of celebrating the fact that you finished it, because first off, how many people actually finish a project? How amazing is it if you've actually finished? But then after you celebrate a little bit and throw your confetti in the air or whatever your celebration happens to be, how do you look at your book critically? Because it needs that. And that's where books and any sort of stories have that ability to transform from something to celebrate that you did it versus something to celebrate that you made it everything that it could possibly be. And there are multiple stages to editing to take it there. And there's that big picture edit, there's kind of smaller micro edits or copy edits, and then there's that final proofreading. Everything is always broken up into those three stages for me: big picture, macro edit, medium level, micro edit, and then your final proofreading.
Those phases are critical, and I love the aspect of celebrating how far you've come, what you've done, that accomplishment. But you're not done yet, and here are the next steps. And that's really at the heart of the workbook. And let me pause for a second and just mention that we are at Book City Roanoke. And this is a podcast. There's a website attached to it. We try to pull together all the things happening around literacy and literary efforts with a focus on engagement and equity in the region. And today we're talking with Chris Spezak. She's an editor and a writer and passionate about words, and is involved in helping people shape words for themselves into stories. I also want to say that we have a sponsor for Book City Roanoke, and that is Book No Further. And that's Roanoke's local independent bookstore, and it's down on the city market. And they've been putting ideas in your head since 2017. And with that, let's dive into the novel editing workbook a little bit. And the subtitle for this is 105 Tips and Tricks for Revising Your Fiction Manuscript. Tell me a little bit about the structure, how you put this together. It's pretty interesting.
Thanks. Well, when I was putting this together, I was honestly basing it off of a lot of the workshops that I teach for writing groups and at writing conferences. Because when I structure those, I really like to tell people, again, that when you think of editing, it's so much more than that proofreading. There are different phases to go through. So I really do structure this in those three levels that I talked about. The first section is that macro editing level. What are the big picture ideas that you need to maybe take a step away from your book or your story and think about character, about atmosphere, about the structure and the pacing and the point of view, just all of those big picture decisions and pieces that you need to analyze for what you put down. Because just because it ended up being in your first draft doesn't necessarily mean that it is the best possible choice for your story. So sometimes there's some big structural changes that happen there, some big meaty explorations of your characters and how maybe not every single one of them should smile as a reaction for being happy, because sometimes accidentally smiling happens everywhere in books, and then people are just maniacally walking around with these smiling all over every single page of your novel. And I get that writers want to show happiness or excitement or enthusiasm, but all of these varied emotions, when they end in smiles, it just goes crazy. So maybe that macro level edit goes back into some exploration about character and how we show our emotions and how to differentiate people. But anyway, that first macro level editing really just dives deep into big picture. And then that second level is that micro edit, where we're looking at sentence structure and thinking about words you might frequently be overusing, or cliches that you might not even realize that you're falling into. Looking at just the correct word usage to make sure we're not flip-flopping a further and a farther and all of these different words. And then, of course, the last section of that book is getting into proofreading strategies, because it's really hard to edit your own work. You know in your head what you meant to say. And when you read your own stuff, you can visualize that place and that character and the suspense of that moment, because it's your own imagination. And sometimes it's hard to critically proofread your own stuff, because you know what you meant to say and your eyes don't always catch it. So that goes into strategies and tricks for that process.
and you give it away in the subtitle that you've got both exercises and questions. Tell me about those.
Well, my first book that came out in 2017 is called Get a Grip on Your Grammar, and it really is diving deep into word usage that just because English might be your native language does not necessarily mean that you know the difference between, the difference between uninterested and disinterested, the difference between loath and loathe, the difference between farther and further and few and less, and all of these little things. So those pieces of the workbook are coming from a couple different directions. First off, I have a blog that I have been publishing since 2012 that has been capturing all of these writing tips. And the funny part of that blog is I started it off for myself and my editing clients, maybe some writer friends. And over the years, goodness, we're 8 years deep into that blog. I'm a couple posts away from my 400th writing tip right now, and that is the blog that, long story short, turned into an indie published book, turned into a literary agent, turned into a book deal, and became that first traditionally published book, Get a Grip on Your Grammar. And then in the marketing of that process, as you've said, I do a lot of traveling to book clubs and libraries and writing conferences, that kind of stuff. I created a program called Grammartopia, which is really a game show. If you're familiar with the NPR show Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, think of that show with a literary bent. It's just playing. Sometimes I do it audience team versus audience team. Sometimes I have a panel of local authors, but we all kind of do this epic battle for who has the most language prowess. And it is playful and fun because people so often think about grammar and word choice as this subject that makes you fall asleep in your sixth grade English classroom, or it's something where there are grammar Nazis involved or grammar police who are going to yell at you. And that's not what it's about at all. It's about bettering ourselves and bettering our communication possibilities. And so yes, those pieces, to get back to your original question, those pieces of my workbook are kind of pulled from my blog, they're pulled from my Grammartopia shows that I have done across the East Coast, and they're those questions that so often we as writers think we know, but we don't. For example, if you're writing an agent pitch or an agent query, please don't pitch your fictional novel. Why? Because a novel, by definition, is fiction, so you're making yourself sound very naive in the first sentence of your pitch, and that is not the tone you want to be starting with. So just little subtleties like that that sometimes slip through the cracks, even when we are super savvy and amazing writers, sometimes we trip ourselves up without realizing it. So those questions between every single exercise are just little reminders to help you along the way.
Yeah. I enjoyed the questions, and of course I love parsing out the differences between the phrases and then thinking about the etymology and thinking about my own word choice and if I've been using it correctly. And I read through and of course it's like since it's a workbook, I'm like, oh, I'm taking some notes and I'm thinking about it. And I thought, oh, it's great that she doesn't give the answers. And then later on, I thought, well, why didn't she give the answers? And then I get to the end and, hey, we've got some answers.
Yeah, all the answers are in the end, but I don't want to put them on the same page because then you won't have the time to think about it.
I appreciate it because sometimes I have a hard time with the jumble if the answer is right below it. If it's in the next day's paper, I do okay without looking at it.
And really, with every single one of those, if you wanted a more in-depth answer, because obviously I didn't do a pages and pages description for every single answer, but the more in-depth version of every single one of those answers is found either in that first book, Get a Grip on Your Grammar, or on my website in those blogs that have been ongoing. So if someone really wants to challenge me on any one of those, because every once in a while someone will, they'll put down like, wait a second, grin and bear it. I know how to spell bear. Go, do you really? Are you accidentally being a little bit naked there when you don't mean to? I mean, there are just so many words that people are convinced they know, but they don't. So please, and it's funny how often I get emails from people through my website where they say, you know, you said this, and I'm like, okay, let's talk about the etymological roots of Shakespeare's use, and then people are always saying, oh, you know what you're talking about. And yes, I do. But I love discussions about language, because even when people are challenging things, that means that we're diving deep in thinking. So that's always a great thing.
Yeah, and overall, I see them as a prompt for curiosity. And well, why is there a difference there? And let me go explore it, wherever they go to find the answers, preferably to your website, which is chris-spizak.com. And Spizak is spelled S-P-I-S-A-K. as always, there's a webpage attached to this podcast, and it will have all the links that we talk about today, links to the books, links to your podcast, and which words you should know. So if you're really interested in that, you're driving along and you want to take a little thought break to think about etymology, it's a terrific podcast to download. And I want to talk a little bit too about writing and thinking, and how do you see, because you spent, this is what you spend your life doing, how is writing related to our thought process in your thinking?
That's such a good question. Now, all of us have so many ideas and so many stories in our own lives and our imaginations, but sometimes we can't figure things out until we spend some time to play with our ideas. And maybe that's playing with your ideas in a journal. I've been doing a journal writing exercise for this moment in history, if anybody wanted to jump in along with me. Sometimes we can't really process what our day-to-day life is and our emotions and the people around us and everything about it unless we sit down and journal it and write it all out for ourselves. And plus, that creates an amazing written history for yourself. Sometimes we can't really understand things until we start telling some stories and diving into different characters and different situations and their emotional arcs. And the same thing goes for writing business communications. If you're writing that great cover letter for your next job, these are essential communications, and we sometimes don't understand what our goals are, what our feelings are, what we want to communicate to the rest of the world until we take the time to write them down. And there's such value in writing rather than just the spoken word because there's a certain level of pause in the writing process. You have to collect your thoughts and collect your words, and it's a degree slower and just a degree enough that you can be a little bit more articulate than perhaps just in a spoken conversation. You can think about your ideas and your arguments and all of that a degree more, and it's a little bit more powerful. So I'm always just such a fan of not just getting your thoughts down on paper, whatever form that might take, whatever your thoughts may be, any thoughts can be written down. You have a voice, you have so much to say, and that's awesome. Every single person does. But then again, this is where my editor hat comes back on. After you get whatever that idea down, whatever that idea is, go back and think about it. Did you say it as succinctly as you could, as clearly as you could, as powerfully as you could? And again, this is such a great moment in history that we can read, we can write, and we have so many tools at our disposal to get our words out there. And how amazing is that?
It is amazing. It kind of blows you away. And there's almost that expectation now that a writer is going to be able to have a podcast and a blog and write and do all of those aspects of it, and it's fun. It does help us learn, and hopefully by working on one in one medium, we're going to be better at another medium as well. I have one more question that I want to ask, and it's really about generosity. Errors, and whether it's a grammatical error or it's an aspect of style that takes us out of what's being communicated, we will put something aside, and there's a valuable message in it, although it's not the easiest to read, because you've got to be really generous and take the time and be willing to overlook some of that. And most readers aren't going to do that. But as an editor, you have to do that. When you get something that's not quite there, what helps you bring that spirit of generosity and outside of the payment? Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, everybody has a voice, everybody has a story, but everyone has had a different path to following their passion, to getting to where they are, where they said, I am so proud of this chapter that I wrote and it is ready for professional editing and cleanup. And that's where we sit and we talk and we say, okay, well, let's look at that chapter. And I look over something, and maybe something, in my opinion, compared to those recent projects I've worked on, is in a completely different place. But everybody starts somewhere. And if they have a passion to keep going, keep going. I feel like so often people think writing is a skill that and a talent that you are born with. But no, writing is an art. It's something, who was it, Hemingway, who said, oh, I'm going to butcher the quote here. So it says something along the lines of that we are all apprentices, and for a writer, you can never become a master. you teach, you learn, you get better and better and better the more that you do it. Everyone starts somewhere. No one is born being this magnificent writer, even though we all like to pretend that's true. And that you and I, of course, were born spectacular at what we do. And hopefully we are spectacular at what we do. We try, but it's a process. It is a learning process for every single.
And life is about learning and constantly learning and improving, I feel. So writing's a terrific analogy there.
And it's hard. And everyone, I feel like there are so many ways to have negativity in life about so many things. But in writing, people are going to be rejected a lot. That's just the nature of the beast. People are going to be hearing no. People are going to be thinking at some point of or other in their own head, I'm great at this. I am terrible at this. I am so wonderful. This is the best thing I've ever written. Oh my gosh, why did I even commit this to the page? That roller coaster of emotions is something that every single writer at every single stage of their career goes through. That's hard enough. You don't need someone to tear you to pieces outside of that. So I always try to keep in mind that generous spirit of, you know what, they had a passion to do this. So let's find a way to hold on to that passion, but keep going. That's not to say that I'm the cheerleader who is only singing praises on the page. I won't say tear apart my client's work, but I will definitely nitpick and show every single opportunity for places to where they can improve. And I will be very, very thorough in that process. But at the same time, I'm going to cheer on their awesome lines and their amazing characters and compare them to a book that is amazing, that is in the same vein, saying, you know what, you have sparks of this in you. Let's see how we can keep pushing you there. Because you have to cheer each other on. It's the same thing with the writing community in Roanoke, the writing community in Richmond. We have to be there for each other.
Well said. And that's a terrific note to end on. Thank you, Chris, for taking the time with me today. And best of luck with all of your work, the many facets of it.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
And I'm Douglas Jackson, and you've been in Book City Roanoke. Thanks a lot. We'll see you next time.